Realities explores the paranormal, preternatural, and supernatural worlds that surround us. Here we delve into those topics that challenge us to think outside the limitations of realism, where we test the boundaries of imagination and are forced to think outside the confines and restrictions of what is normal. We are the creators, the writers, the artists, and the insane. Welcome to our Weird Realities.
President John F. Kennedy was assassinated on November 22, 1963 at 12:30 p.m. while riding in a motorcade in Dallas during a campaign visit. Kennedy's motorcade was turning past the Texas School Bank Depository at Dealey Plaza, with crowds lining the streets when shots rang out. The driver of the president's Lincoln limousine, with its top off, raced to nearby Parkland Memorial Hospital, but after being shot in the neck and head, Kennedy was pronounced dead at 1 p.m. He was 46 years old. Mm-hmm. A generation of Americans would forever remember where they were when they heard about the president's assassination, as it would have a profound political and cultural impact on the nation. Welcome to Weird Murders, Mysteries, and Mayhem. I'm paranormal fantasy author Hadley Thorne, and with me tonight are retired CIA agent Scott Baker, behavioral health expert Jen Sammons, Miss Finley Jones, and our special guest, retired NYPD detective Vic Ferrari. Welcome, everybody.
Hi, thank you for having me on your show.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Sorry, I've got to add Jen to the screen.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Jen.
Hey.
Hey, Jen.
Okay, sorry, I don't have my avatar or any of that good jazz.
Hello, Landa.
Hey, Landa.
Hi, Landa.
Well, I'm going to turn this one over to the Weird Kids. I am by no means an expert on this subject, but I do believe that Scott and Jen and Finley probably are much more than me, and Vic as well. So, guys, have at it.
Scott, this is kind of your baby.
Well, I want you got ladies. I want the rest of you to go first because I have I'm pretty certain of my theory, but I want to hear what you guys say so I know how to blurt mine out. You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, okay. So I don't know if any of you guys watched it, but the JFK Revisited was done by Oliver Stone, and it like basically wasn't the movie, but it was all of the things that have happened up to 2021. And they're going to release more at the end of this year. I didn't know if you guys read about that, but there's still some to be disclosed, some documents and things like that. But yeah, he revisited all of the information, basically. Like, there were some things that I didn't know about. One of which being that Jack Ruby was an FBI confidential informant. I thought that was very interesting.
I believe that.
Did you? I'm sorry?
No, I said I believe that.
Yeah. And I mean, the mafia connection with Jack Ruby, pretty loose, but that was the other part of that. Going back to the assassination of JFK, there were just a lot of things that he pointed out that didn't quite make sense. And I mean, I'd say the biggest thing was the one bullet that caused the 7 injuries. But God, I'd love to hear your stuff. Cause I was mostly wanting to be on because I wanted to hear what you had to say.
Okay. Take the JFK movie and flush it down the toilet.
Right. Yeah.
It is a piece of crap. It's based on a book by Jim Garrison. I'll get into Jim Garrison. Oh, what was the name of the book? It was based on a book by Jim Garrison, On the Trail of the Assassins.
Right.
That book has about as much credibility. It has no credibility whatsoever. The scene in the movie, the best scene when Kevin Costner, who's playing, hang on a second. I've seen this movie, Jim Garrison. Okay. When he meets with the CIA agent, Donald Sutherland, and Donald Sutherland pieces it all together. That never happened. that he Garrison never met with a CIA agent who fit it all in. That was Oliver Stone making the connections to make his movie plausible. Jim Garrison is a fraud. Yes, he was a district attorney. It turned out that he has a lot of ties with the mob. And that book was, he wrote that book to purposely distract people. I read the book. I've read the reviews of it. It's not that good. And the other book, there was another book that was in, on that one. I think it was Jim Ma's Crossfire. If that's the book I'm thinking about, that's the one where the writer decided to pull all the conspiracy theories together. So you've got Cuba, the Russians, the FBI, Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, the CIA, the FBI, and the Defense Department having five assassins shoot at them from different areas. It's crap. I got hooked on the JFK assassination because I read, when I was in college, I worked at a bookstore, and a book came in, Robert Lifton's Best Evidence. I don't know if you've ever read it. I used to believe the whole, you know, Warren Commission, all that stuff. Best Evidence is written by a forensics doctor who, while reading the reports, put everything together and realized they didn't match. And you got to read the book. You got to read the book with an open mind. But he pretty much put together a very compelling, well-documented argument that JFK's body was altered between the time it left Parkland Hospital and arrived at Walter Reed.
Yes.
And he's got some really interesting, fascinating details about it. If you look at the autopsy photograph, you can see a metal rod in the head.
I watched it's a lady that she's a mortician, and she did a YouTube video on the autopsy of JFK. And it was fascinating. It obviously didn't have anything to do with who killed who or whatever, but they were saying from the minute that the body arrived at the hospital until it was in the ground in Arlington Cemetery, it was a comedy of errors with everything that happened with that body.
I believe that too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at it, originally he shot in the front, the exit wound is in the back. You can't have that because that blows up the whole theory of being shot by Lee Harvey Oswald. So they doctored it. They widened the exit wound so it came around front, and then they put the entry wound.
Oh, he froze.
CIA is stopping him. They don't want him talking.
To make it look like how. Damn it, guys, let me talk just once. So, no, but they redid the exit wound so it looked like the shot hit him from the back and left the front. And if you look at the autopsy photograph from Walter Reed and compare it with the Zapruder film, nothing. They're not the same at all. My opinion on this, and I can go into any details, I tried to look at it from like a law enforcement perspective. Vic, tell me if you think I'm off base on this. Okay. Who had the motive? Everybody that's been mentioned. The Russians hated them because of the Cuban Missile Crisis.
I think the mob. I think the mob back then had the balls to do it. I mean, it's not the mafia that's nowadays that's been emasculated, but back then, I mean, they ran cities, right? Like. So, you know, the whole thing with Kennedy was they stole the election in Chicago, and then they thought that they were going to be, you know, given, you know, carte blanche to do whatever they want. And the next thing you know, here comes his brother, and he's going, and he, you know, what Hoover refused to do for decades was look into the mob. All of a sudden, you know, JFK's kid brother now is dragging them before Congress, embarrassing them. And supposedly, you know, Joe Kennedy either was not, you know, with it anymore. He's the one that supposedly made the deal with the Chicago mob to steal the election. So, you know, And Kennedy also at the time was asking a lot of questions in government. You know, I think it was one of those things where I think the mob had the motive. And I think there were people in the United States government that weren't sad to see him go.
Oh, not very few were. Yeah.
Right. So I in my humble opinion, that's what I think happened. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, as far as the Cubans are concerned, look what happened less than 10 years later with the Watergate break-in. Mm-hmm. Who did the intelligence community use? The Cubans,
yeah.
Right? Weren't a bunch of them involved mm-hmm. in the break-in of the Watergate hotel? So
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, and wasn't it the same guy that the guy from the CIA that wrote all that the guy that started Mission Impossible, Hunt? You know who I'm talking about, or
he's frozen again.
It's like talking to Max Headroom.
I got cut off at Mission Impossible.
The guy, what's his name? This the famous CIA guy. He's since passed, Hunt.
God, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so there was supposedly a link with him, you know, from Watergate, you know, and then 10 years before or 8 years before the Watergate, the Kennedy assassination.
Mm-hmm. See, I agree with you. I think it's the mob. I looked at all the suspects. There was a lot of motive, but I ruled out the Cubans because they would not kill Kennedy. They knew that if they got caught killing the president, Cuba would have been a parking lot and no one in the world would have said a word. The Russians were not going to miss not going to play around with a possible nuclear war. Right. And Khrushchev was still trying to recover from the Cuban Missile Crisis. Now, to all the people that think it's a great government conspiracy and all.
Dang it.
This is going to be like a 5-hour podcast.
I've heard so many conspiracy theories. Yeah, it is. Sorry. Come on, guys. I'm on your side. We don't do these elaborate covert operations. I mean, the more moving parts there are, the greater the chance it's going to fail. And, you know, like I joked with a friend of mine, if the CIA was going to kill him, everybody else in Dealey.
It's like the great suspense.
Oswald would have died. JFK would have been the only one. Not plus, they didn't have to kill him. I mean, the way they did. They could have either, like, poisoned him. JFK died last night of a heart attack. Or even worse. Remember, this was the year of... Yeah, I probably should, Linda. This was the era of Camelot, of Robin, Laura, Petrie, of everybody being, you know, it was the Leave It to Beaver type families. Mm-hmm. All they would have had to do was post the evidence, and there was tons of it, that he was a philanderer, that him and Robert were passing Marilyn Monroe around like a doobie at a frat party. It would have destroyed them. You wouldn't have had to kill. Camelot would have come down. John never would have gotten reelected. Robert would never be run for reelection.
I agree with you, but you see the way the press is reluctant to go after somebody they like. Like, look at the Hunter Biden laptop. I mean, they sat on that story for a year and a half. So, I mean, yeah. I see what you're saying with the press. They could have leaked it to him, but would they have run with that story? Because he was the press's darling.
I think they would have back then. I really do think they would have if that came out. I mean, every scandal related to the JFK administration didn't come out until years later. So there were so many ways they could have got rid of him quietly, not in such a messed up public display. I think, but there is a government cover-up. So that leads me to what you said, Vic. I think it was the mob. They were pissed off. Did I get?
No, you're going.
Okay, so they got pissed off because they gave Kennedy the election and Kennedy turned on them. If you read, there's a book out there that I found fascinating, Contract on America. It's an old book. It's written by David Scheim, Contract on America. He makes a very compelling argument that all of this was mob related. Ruby was an FBI informant, but he was also well known to the mob. and he was well known to the cops. How else is some guy going to walk down while you're taking a presidential assassin, shoot him in the stomach, and nobody shoots back at him?
Yeah. Well,
yeah, and there was evidence. There was evidence that a lot of the cops,
you know, and the whole thing about he was willing to.
Oh, you froze up on again, on the Scott.
Who, me? Yeah.
Vic, what were you saying?
I agree with Scott. I mean, I think he definitely was an FBI informant. He was also a mob associate. So basically, the way the mob works is, I mean, Ruby was Jewish, so he was never going to be like a made guy in the mafia. But he's an associate. What does that mean? Means he's allowed to earn, provided he kicks up to the capo in that area. So they allow him to operate, and in return, Ruby can kind of act. You know, he can kind of be a tough guy. He can smack people around if somebody gets killed in his bar. They're going out the back door, and the Chicago, like he said, that the Dallas cops knew him very well because he probably a lot of mob guys. What they'll do is they like to cozy up, especially mob guys that own legitimate businesses. They love to cozy up to cops. If they own a restaurant, oh, don't worry about it, guys. Dinner's on me. Or if they own a bar, drinks are on me or whatever. But it's a quid pro quo. So what, you know, let's just say Uncle Joe owns a restaurant and he's been giving the cops free meals forever. He'll come to them one day and go, listen, I hate to ask, but could you do me a favor? Sure, Joe, what's wrong? Well, my daughter's dating this guy and I don't know his name and anything. If I gave you the plate, could you just tell me where he lives? Now, that's not his daughter's boyfriend. That's some guy that owes him $10,000 that he's going to send a couple of guys to put him in the fucking hospital. So the mob definitely likes to cozy up with law enforcement for favors. And sometimes, you know, it's either cops don't care. They know the game and they just don't give a shit. Or you get a couple of morons that just don't know any better and don't realize this guy just is giving them free stuff for favors. So, yeah, I think he's right as far as that's probably how Ruby gained access into that parking lot.
Yeah. See, I think the mob set it up, and these are some of my reasons. Oswald was a patsy. He was an idiot. If anybody honestly believes Oswald could pull this off by himself, I've got a bridge to sell you in Nevada. But he, former Marine, he went to the Soviet Union. He came back. He was working. Yeah, he was working for the Cubans. The CIA and the FBI were talking to him. You know, there goes, you know, 1,001 conspiracy theories right there. The other thing is the turn they made in front of the Texas School Book Depository was illegal. You're not supposed to turn more than 90 degrees. That turn right in front of the school, which was, I think, like 120, should never have happened. But John Connolly, the mayor, had asked for it so they could take a particular route. Now, John Connolly had mob connections, and I found this fascinating. If you've read the transcripts, the first bullet hits JFK in the throat. The second bullet misses and hits John Connolly in the shoulder. John Connolly's words were, "Oh my God, they're going to kill us all." Now think about that. You know, not, "Oh shit, they're shooting at us. Oh my God. They are going to kill us all." I mean, that tells, and then the fact that, you know, after John Connolly eventually lost re-election, his fortunes fell apart. He went bankrupt.
Can I ask you a question, Scott? Sure. What you're saying is contrary to what, like, the Warren report said, right? Like, you agree with that. Okay.
Yeah.
So when you say that the bullet went in his throat, that was the first one.
Right.
Well, what they're saying is that's not the case. They're saying that the first one was the one that hit the street or the curb. And then the second one was the one that went through his back and out his throat.
Yep.
And it hit Connolly. So
after making two 90-degree turns.
I'm sorry.
After making two 90-degree turns.
Well, and I don't even know about the turn part of it, but I was just saying, like, they're talking about that one bullet, and that was from Arlen Specter. I don't know if you guys looked into that, but it caused all seven injuries, pretty much the one that's in his back, supposedly, the one that came out his neck, the one that went into Conley's back, destroyed some of his rib. I can't remember which one exactly it was. I have it wrote down if we need it. Destroyed some of his rib on the way, went out of his chest, into his wrist, broke his wrist, shattered it, out his wrist, and into his leg.
Yeah.
It caused all seven of those injuries, that one bullet. They said
the magic bullet.
Beyond those three, if they went beyond the three shots, then that would mean there is some conspiracy because there was only shells for three shots, right? So they're saying it only can be three, and that one had to be the one that did all that damage.
Plus, even if you could buy, I mean, I've seen conspiracy theories where they've lined up JFK, you know, like practically standing up and bending over. Do you really think a bullet, I think with the Mamaka Kano was like a, what was it? It was a small caliber rifle. There's no way the bullet is going to go through, you know, make seven wounds. To Alan's question, yes, there is a theory that somebody was shooting from a manhole cover. That is wild and outlandish to me because you're shooting from a manhole cover. All these people are around Dealey Plaza. Nobody goes, hey, look, Ma, there's a guy shooting from a manhole cover. I agree that the Warren Commission report is bullshit.
Okay.
But think of it this way. You're LBJ. Lincoln. Kennedy has just been killed, and you're told the mafia did it. Are you going to go out and say, yeah, the president of the United States was taken down by the mob, but there's nothing to worry about. We have things under control. They'd be ruling the country. So they had to make up the Warren Commission report. They had to, and it was all bullshit.
So is the 9/11 Commission report. I mean, I read that. When that came out, that was going around my office, and you had 20 detectives and not one person. There was so many holes in it. Like, they should have hired us. Like, we were just reading it. It was just so, it was nonsense.
So I think that's why they did it. You know, they could not admit that, oh, not a manhole cover. You're right. You're talking about the drain. Still the same thing. If somebody was shooting from a drain at ground level, you would have thought somebody else would have seen it and reported it. But
what
I
about
think
the umbrella man.
I saw the umbrella man.
Umbrella man, I have heard so many things about that. Yeah, he was about to be assassinated because you lifted the air umbrella over the Bay of Pigs. Or it could have been just some guy who had an umbrella. I mean, that's the great thing about conspiracy theories. Everything. My ex-wife and I, we lived in D.C. during the D.C. sniper. You remember that? Okay. And she said to me, she says, you know, well, what about the fact that, you know, they say, oh, everybody says it came from a white van. A white van is seen at every, you know, assassination site. I told her, look out the window and tell me how many white vans you see. There were three of them. Anything can be turned in. I think the mob killed them. I think there was a gunman up in there in the Texas School Book Depository that was firing, but he had a bad shot. The grassy knoll was the gunman. First bullet in here, and then the one that took out his brain. The Warren Commission report was done purposely to cover it up. Then Robert decides to run. And I found this fact interesting. Sirhan Sirhan killed Robert Kennedy. Sirhan Sirhan, and I don't remember the details. I can always look it up. Sirhan Sirhan, I think, had a 22.
Did everybody leave?
No, we're just waiting.
Waiting on Scott.
Kennedy was killed with a 38. The mob's cutting it out. The only person that had a 38 was the deputy behind Robert Kennedy. a deputy who had deep ties with the mob in California. If you notice the photographs, Robert Kennedy is holding a clip-on tie in his hand. The clip-on tie belonged to the deputy with the 38. Could be conspiracy theory. But what I think it was they killed JFK, the mob killed Robert Kennedy, and that, you know, Sirhan Sirhan was taking the fall for that one. Okay, we've got that. That's great. We've already got the Warren Commission report. But notice all of the main mobsters died mysterious deaths after the Robert Kennedy assassination. I think it was Giancana who was one of the big ones. I don't remember which ones died, but one of them was under FBI custody in a 14th floor hotel room. He was going to turn state's evidence. He slipped and fell out of a 14th story room with the FBI watching him. Roselli, one of the big mobsters, I think it was from Miami, was found floating in a 55-gallon drum. Cut up, they put him in the drum, they sealed it up. Everybody attributed it to the mob. The mob didn't do that anymore because when the body decays, it creates gas, it floats to the surface, you find the drum, okay, you know somebody killed them. Unless it was somebody sending a message to the mob. So I do think it was the mob. I think they got out of control, they killed them, and I think the government just, you know, made up the whole lie about it, has stuck with it, is keeping it secret to this day, because it's really going to be hard to admit that the president of the United States is so open to something like, I mean, we've seen it 1,000 times. I remember when W was in Iraq giving a press conference and the reporter was throwing his flip-flops at him. You can get to the president if you want, but that's my opinion. It was covered up for that fact.
Well, why was it covered up by the FBI and CIA? I'm still a little bit confused by that.
Because they don't want that, nobody in the government could admit that the mob was able to take out the president of the United States.
Okay.
So everybody just got together and just fudged the whole thing. You know, Oswald was put out as the patsy. You know, so it's like, okay, he's out there. Did you talk to him? Well, of course we talked to him. Me and the FBI talked to him. He just came back from Russia. What do you want? You know? You know, we're always asking him about what's going on in the community. It's
How many bullets do you think were fired?
I think there were 3 bullets that were fired. Oh, wait a minute. No, I think there were actually, let me see if I remember this. There was the first bullet that hit JFK in the throat. You see him in the Zapruder film.
Yep.
Okay.
Which they say is the same one that went through his back and out his throat.
They did was they did the tracheotomy over it.
Yeah, I know. So
they couldn't prove it. Then there was the one that hit Conley. There may have been also another bullet fired from the depository, the one that hit JFK in the back. And then there was the 4th fatal shot that hit him in the head where you see. And everybody says that the body going forward and then, you know, when he's leaning forward, the body snapping back shows that when the bullet hit him in the back of the head, he went forward and then snapped back. I don't buy that. He was leaning over, choking, and when the bullet hits, the bullet doesn't hit, and then he leans over. He's leaning over, the bullet hits, and the back of his head explodes off.
Okay, so should I just throw out everything the Warren Commission said? Because what they said was there was 3 bullets, that's it.
I listened to an account where they were talking about they had taken the audio of that day and run it through some stuff, some more recent technology, and there was possibly 6 occurrences of a gunshot during that time span.
Well, and Conley was hit in several locations. They're saying one bullet did all of that. And that can't, I mean, he didn't believe it.
Well, no. The interesting thing about that was that the bullet supposedly that they attributed this, the magic bullet, was when the one they recovered was pretty much in great shape. Yeah. And a bullet that had been through ricocheting like that would not have been in great shape.
No.
That had basically broken two bones. One was his rib and also his wrist.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and they found that on the table after they moved the body into the emergency room.
What do you think, Vic? Do you think one bullet could have done that?
I've seen bullets do wild things, but not that much. Not like that. I think there was another, you know, at least another round fired.
And there was an investigation, and I don't remember the name of the investigation. It might have been part of the church committee, but there was an investigation done about 10 years later.
Well, I've read that 1,500 documents have been released that have never been seen
based
before.
On-
and that they're going to release some more. But my question, this is CIA documents, Scott. So my question is, why is the CIA being so reluctant with coming forward with these documents?
The final batch is supposed to come out later this year. It's supposed to happen this year. This is the last batch. But Biden said, basically, okay, release anything that you can back then. And then this one, he's saying, go ahead, release it. Mm-hmm. And I think it was October. It was either October or December of this year that it's the remainder is supposed to be released, mm-hmm. unless there is something that is it can stay redacted. Basically, he said, unless it's going to cause some sort of problem with our foreign affairs or it's going to put somebody in jeopardy.
Well, let me ask Scott this question: Would you put it past your former employer to put bogus documents in there to lead people on a wild goose chase?
If you'd asked me that 10 years ago, I would have said no. Today, I would say anything's possible. Okay. The reason it could be, and I'd have to see the documents, are they related to their dealings with Oswald? Did, you know, what Oswald said, Oswald pointing out other people, anything that could lead to a covert operation. I mean, we're very secretive about that. Even if the operation is over, we don't want the enemy to know. And Russia's not our friend. We don't want the enemy to know how we did it. Because if they figure out how we did it this time, then they're going to be looking for that in the future.
And that stuff is still going to be redacted, but the other stuff is basically the rest of it is going to be released.
But what are they going to release? Like that's what I was saying. Yeah. That's what Scott was saying, that, you know, would the CIA line that report with bogus stories just so 50 years from now, 60 years from now, nobody ever really gets to the bottom of this.
Right.
We usually don't do that. You know, when we write a report, we write the report. Is it always accurate? It depends on who's writing it. If you're talking about a case manager that screwed something up big time, no, he's probably going to lie on it. But I don't think bogus documents were put in there.
Okay.
It's probably just other operations, things that Oswald may have told them that they don't want to know. For all we know, and this is just wild speculation. Maybe Oswald, Maria, and John, Lee Harvey's kids are working for the Russians. You know, working as double agents for Russia. I don't know. It's not unusual to redact this. I mean, look at the way the Air Force, the Pentagon, redacts things about UFOs. And almost everyone today is convinced UFOs exist.
That's true.
That was also one of the conspiracies that I read about, was aliens did it.
That is a conspiracy that he was going to release all the alien stuff. You know, he was going to go public with the aliens. So certain people had him. I was telling Hadley, I was with a group of guys, I know a bunch of people who are like massive conspiracy theorists, and they'll believe anything. And they were talking about JFK, and I finally just casually said to them, because they knew where I was, I says, come on, Elvis did it. And they all looked at me, and I says, come on, it makes common sense. Elvis and Marilyn were good friends. RFK and JFK, you know, were passing them around back and forth like a doobie at a frat party. So Elvis arranged it to have them bumped off. So the CIA figured, we can't do this anymore. You know, we don't want Elvis killing off, you know, presidential candidates. But what? You can't shoot Elvis. You can't take him out. You know, he's one of the most famous people. Thus the creation of the CIA poison toilet seat.
Those
guys, you heard it first here, folks. They were talking about that for 5 minutes.
Yeah, so Milton William Cooper was a radio personality, author, and gun rights advocate. So he told people about Project Luna, which was a secret alien base on the dark side of the moon. And he promoted the conspiracy theory that JFK was assassinated by a gas pressure device that aliens supplied to the driver of the presidential limo because JFK was about to expose the Washington alien collusion.
I like the poison toilet seat story better.
Yeah,
I think so.
Poison toilet seat. Yeah. Wow. Well, I've got questions about Jack Ruby and Oswald. What was their connection? And I say this, I think I told you, I've crammed for this session today, and I'm not really sure about things, but I saw some accounts where they were homosexuals, and then I saw some accounts where they weren't, and I don't really know what to think anymore. So can someone clarify this for me? Because Jennifer didn't even hear that at all.
I never heard that.
Me neither.
No, okay. I've never heard that. And in fact, I don't think they had, other than maybe Oswald popping by the strip club now and then, I don't think they had any business contact whatsoever. It was the other than, you know, Oliver that very fateful day in the police station.
Well, in Oliver Stone's movie, there's a scene where Lee Harvey Oswald is with Joe Pesci and Danny Ferry, and they're in Jack Ruby's bar. You know what I mean? But like you said, that's Oliver Stone's idea of, you know, piecing everything together in a nice little box.
Yeah. And that movie was just, I mean, read Jim Garrison's book if you want to see a fictionalized version of what went on. That and the Warren Report.
What about the Secret Service? Because wasn't there supposed to be an agent on the back bumper of the limo?
No. Now, there is an interesting that makes it part of a conspiracy theory. This has never been explained. Three of the four agents that were supposed to be with him, they ran on the car behind them on the bumper. So if something happened, they would run forward. It was the JFK assassination that changed the way the Secret Service did things. The only one that had not been replaced was the one that ran forward and jumped on the car. And I don't know if you've read this, Jacqueline wasn't trying to get out of that car. If you look at it, Jacqueline was scooping up what was left of JFK's brains and then helped him aboard. So I don't buy that Jacqueline panicked and tried to get away.
No, she was committed. They said she did not leave his side.
No.
At all. And she did not change clothes until they got back to Washington.
Yeah. No, she...
But she wanted people to see what they had done to him.
Exactly. Now, one of the conspiracy parts of it, of the changing the bodies, was... if you'll notice, LBJ is standing there on Air Force One holding the Bible with her beside him. That was to get her away so they could, apparently, they transferred the body. They took JFK out of the coffin, put him on a transport, flew him to, according to the conspiracy theory by best evidence, Robert Lifton, flew him there, took him to Walter Reed, altered the body, and then brought him in for the autopsy.
there was problems in Dallas with the body. Was the medical examiner there refused to release the body to fly back to DC without mm-hmm. him doing, because he said, this is a murder that happened in my county. Yeah. You know, I'm mm-hmm. going to do the investigation.
And so they put roughed him. Well, they didn't rough him up. They basically had like their hands on their guns and put him up against the wall and said, we're taking him.
Yeah.
So he didn't have a lot of choice.
But and they also like in the coffin that they had procured, they had to line it with so much plastic and stuff. I mean, they said that, I mean, they had so many problems with that body that it doesn't, I mean, I'm not surprised at all that they might have done something to it, because they said that it would have ruined the coffin from the blood spilling out. They had filled it full of plastic, and then when they got it to the plane, and you can actually see the footage of this, of them getting the coffin off of the plane, mm-hmm. they dropped it. I mean, it was just a comedy of errors with everything that happened with mm-hmm. that casket. So,
well, if they let the guy, if they let the forensics people do the autopsy in Dallas, it would have proven that the fatal wound came from the front. There was no way Oswald would have been, he might have been a co-conspirator at best. Now, what I found interesting, they did a documentary on it later. They brought each of the doctors in from Parkland, showed them the photographs, and said, "Is this the wound you saw?"
And they said, "No."
No, they all said yes. Then they brought in the doctors from Walter Reed and showed them the. Now, we never saw the photographs because it was too intense. And all the ones from Walter Reed said, "This is what we saw."
Yeah. Actually, Scott, I saw the documentary today, and the doctors from Parkland were like, "No, there was a huge hole that was an exit wound that they're not showing on the autopsy photos."
Find out the name of that documentary, because
I got it right here. It's JFK Revisited, and it's JFK Revisited Through the Looking Glass. I'm telling you, it was fascinating. I actually took 5 pages of notes.
I want to watch that then, because the one I saw, they all said, now if JFK, now if Stone was showing them the Walter Reed photographs, of course they're going to say no.
No, no,
that's not what we saw.
No, what they all described was a huge hole in the back on the right side, and they said that is clearly an exit from him being shot in the front side, and it like showed how it would go. Right. And they even had the one doctor from, not Walter Reed, where was it? Bethesda, maybe?
Bethesda, yes.
That doctor that had said it was a gunshot wound to the head, and he described where it went in, and they kept trying to get him to change his testimony.
There was definitely messing around with the body.
And it actually wasn't Oliver Stone. It mostly, I mean, it was like mostly all about the different evidence that's come out. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I found fascinating was, this was John Hunt. He was a private citizen. When they released all those documents, he went through and he basically looked at the chain of custody for the bullet. Mm-hmm. You know, the magic bullet that we're talking about.
Right.
And the two people that were at Parkland, the maintenance and the personnel guy, they got it to those two people, plus Johnson, who was a Secret Service agent. He took it to his chief, basically, James Rowley. Then that guy took it to Elmer Todd, who was in the lab. And then Robert Frazier, who was also mm-hmm. in the lab. Okay, so all of these people were involved in the chain of custody. Their initials missing. The time difference between when Elmer Todd got it and Robert Frazier, it's flip-flopped.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's saying that Elmer Todd got it at 8:50 p.m. on the day.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Frazier is supposed to have gotten it afterwards in the lab at 7:30. Mm-hmm. He can't have it before he got it from the person he got it from. Yeah. So there's a discrepancy there. And this was just a Joe private citizen who found the discrepancy. And he said, I have a question about this. This doesn't make sense. How did he get the bullet before the person before him got it?
Well, this is a good question for Vic. With chain of custody, I'm sure that he dealt with this a lot with police stuff as a detective.
Right. Yeah, the less people that touch something, the better, especially if it's something serious. And I don't think anything is more serious than, you know, the assassination of the president of the United States. Right. So, yeah, it should have stayed with one person. All the evidence should have stayed with one person and gone to a lab. You know, it just seems like they were, you know, it was like a hot potato. This one had it. This one had it. This one had it. It just seemed like it seems like the whole investigation was chaotic.
Yeah.
And I think it was chaotic. Hey, Mark. I think it was chaotic because it wasn't planned. One minute, you know, JFK's waving at everybody. The next minute, the president of the United States' head is blown apart on, well, it wasn't public television. It was a Zapruder film. They had 24 hours at most to set up this conspiracy theory to make it look like it was somebody other than the mob. And, yeah, they made a lot of mistakes on it. And I'm sure that every agency took huge hits.
One of the things that I read was that the Secret Service and the FBI had not communicated as to what route they were taking.
Well, you know, you just answer Scott's, you know, Scott, you bring up an interesting point. You know, maybe, like you said, the mob does it, but then why doesn't the government want to get to the bottom of it? Maybe the Democratic Party realizes if this crime gets solved, it's going to show they stole an election. It's not going to be good for the party. The election was invalid in the first place. You know what I mean? It was almost like, don't dig too deep with this. Just send the public off on a wild goose chase and let's just get on with our lives.
Today I would agree with you, but back then because back then, I don't think it was the Democratic Party that rigged the election. It was Joseph.
It was Joseph.
He didn't do it alone.
No, but I'm saying it wasn't as if the Speaker of the House and the President and the majority leader of the Senate and five or six others.
He had a lot of people involved in that, right? Wasn't it supposedly, wasn't it Sinatra that made that Sinatra through Peter Lawford made the connection with the Chicago mob to rig it?
Might have been, yeah. But I mean, what I'm saying is I don't think it was the party as a whole. There may have been certain members. I think it was just the panic. We can't admit the mob can take out the president of the United States. Make up this lie. And then once you make up the lie, you got to stick to it. And that's why I think so much of this stuff, when you look at it, is like, how the hell can you get away with that? It's like when you lie to your kids, you know, and the kids catch you in the lie and you're lying even more and it gets more out of control. It was the same thing here. There was a commission about 10 to 15 years after the Warren report that verified there was a gunman based on the wounds, based on the way the body worked, based on the sounds, that there was a gunman on the grassy knoll.
Well, it was a bipartisan commission as well. I mean, the Warren report was made up of Republicans and Democrats. If it was going to do that much damage to the Democrats, then I think the Republicans would have been all about that.
True. Maybe, but, you know, bear in mind, you're talking 1963.
Right.
Politics back then was nothing like it is today. Now politics is like a shank fight in a prison yard. Back then, everybody got together and said, you know, make up a lie. Let's go with this.
And well, actually, no. There were people on the Warren Commission that did not agree and wanted to do their own, like, dissent from the Warren Commission. Because there was a phone conversation that happened with Johnson and, I can get you his name, just one second here, It was Russell, Senator Richard Russell of mm-hmm. Georgia. He called the day that the Warren report came out, he called Johnson and said, hey, I just wanted to tell you what I think. And he goes, well, what does it matter who hit, which ones hit Conley, which bullet hit Conley? Yeah. He goes, well, it doesn't matter much, except for they're trying to say that all the damage was caused to, you know, JFK and his back through his throat, all the way down to mm-hmm. all of that one bullet did all that to Conley. In addition to that, mm-hmm. he goes, I just don't believe it. And he goes, and I'm not going to say I do. And Johnson said, I don't believe it either.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's interesting that there were lots of people that were involved that didn't buy into it. Yeah. I kind of came into it with the idea that the Warren report was like, not the Bible, but you know, it was something that was legit and people right. agreed to it and everybody kind of went along with it. But that's not the case. There were people no. on the commission that said, no, this is bunk.
Yeah.
That was actually a part of that documentary as well, Scott. So you'll see okay. some of that too.
All right. Yeah. I'm definitely going to watch that one because that's got new information in it. And I'm fascinated by this.
And it's on Showtime, just so you know.
Oh,
hey, I got.
I can give you my login information.
Don't say that on live air.
Hey,
I'm just kidding. I would never do that. That's breaking the law.
Vic, what?
I got a funny Jack Ruby story.
Okay.
So I know a woman who's a couple of years older than me, and she's from Chicago, and she told me this story. She was a teenager, and Jack Ruby is buried in Chicago. Hmm. So after a keg party, her and a bunch of the boys she hung out with, they were partying in the cemetery, and the boys backed up their van into the cemetery and stole Jack Ruby's tombstone. Well, it made all the papers in the local area, and the FBI got involved, started not going to local businesses and knocking on doors. And the kids, somebody's uncle, you know, knew a mobster, and mysteriously Jack Ruby's tombstone returned a couple of weeks later. But she said she knew the kid that took it. And it was in somebody's basement for like 2 weeks before someone said, you better get that shit back up there.
Yeah. Well, would have gone on a lot, would have made a lot of money on the black market.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know what? It's not like a ring. I mean,
no, I know.
Are you going to keep a tube? I agree, it would be cool. Yeah. But like, where the fuck are you going to keep this thing? And like, you know, whoever you show it to is going to think you're a ghoul.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like a ring or a gun collection or.
Yeah. You know, something that you can hide and only show to your good close friends.
Yeah. Like those stolen paintings from the Gardner Museum.
Yeah. So, no, I think it's a fascinating part of history. Wading through it. You know, those people like Jim Garrison, who I believe, honestly, yeah, he wrote that. I think he wrote that book because the mob asked him to defer it all, to try to divert attention to the agency. You know, there's, like I said, there was one guy who wrote a book that incorporated every conspiracy theory available at the time. It was laughable.
Well, speaking of books, Vic, what's your latest book that you're working on?
Oh, I just released Confessions of a Catholic High School Graduate. It's a picture of a kid in a Catholic high school uniform running out of a confession booth. That really happened to me. And the book is available on Amazon.
You want to tell our audience a little bit about your books that you write?
Yeah, I've written 6 books, 4 of which are a series of just books about the funny and ridiculous things that happened during the course of my NYPD career.
Cool. Well, we hope that you'll come back and visit us when we have some more of these true crime podcasts. We do them about once a month. And you see the crew mm-hmm. that's here. Morgana Calder usually joins us as well. And we just get together and we talk crime and have a good time.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you very much. And I appreciate all you guys putting up with me. Thanks.
Scott, what's got going on?
It was great, Vic. You know, getting your take on the mafia and how things work and chain of evidence. I am my third book in the Tatiana Paranormal series, The Ghost of the Maria Doria, comes out this Friday. It's pre-sale on Amazon. You can get it for $2.99 on Kindle. Saturday, it goes up to $3.99. So please pick up your copy. This is a good one. This has got some scary scenes in it. And I'm working on the second, The Chronicles of Paul book. Hopefully that'll be out around maybe October.
All right. Jennifer Finley, what y'all got going on?
Go ahead, Finley.
Just, you know, listening to some weird realities.
She sounds so excited.
A woman, a few words.
Jen, what you got going on?
Weird mystery murders and mayhem on Weird Realities. Right. Working with you and yeah.
Yeah. Jen and I have some projects going on, so that's it. And I think that's going to do it for us this time around, guys. It has been great. I've learned a lot. And I have to say that listening to Scott, Vic, and Jen has been incredibly interesting. And yeah. Finley, we need to talk because I think that your Space Jam is something we need to figure out where we can work that into an article somewhere. But love you guys. Thanks for tuning in. We really appreciate y'all coming in tonight. Mark, Mona, Landa, everybody that showed up, we really appreciate it. And until next time, stay weird.
Thank you.
Ciao.
Thanks, y'all.